Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at PursuitAthleticPerformance.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this new edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. I'm Coach Al Lyman. Thanks for joining me today. I've got a special guest on the podcast that I'd like to introduce to everybody. This is the 30 to 34 age group winner at the 2014 Ironman Coeur d'Alene, and someone who I've known for many years and who I couldn't be more proud of. Triathlete Rachel Beckman, who's now, I think, in down there outside of D.C. in Virginia. Rachel, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm awesome. So thanks for coming on the podcast today. I'm excited to share a little bit of you with our audience. They don't know, but of course you and I know. We go back a few years. I don't know how many exactly, but it's been obviously a great 2014 for you. We'll talk a little bit about your background, and this season obviously is flowing out as probably as good as it possibly could. You went and nabbed the first age group in a very competitive age group at a major Ironman race. You get to go back to Kona now, I think, for the fourth time. So, first of all, before we get into all of that, though, tell our audience, our listeners, a little bit about who you are. I'll preface it by saying you and I met when you were a cadet at the Coast Guard Academy. You're actually active duty now in the Coast Guard. And, I was there some years ago as a percussionist in the Coast Guard band. That's another lifetime now, but... tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Rach. Where do you come from, and how did you get started in the sport of triathlon? You know, all of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, that would be a really long story, so I'll try to do abridged versions of everything. But yeah, we met at the Coast Guard Academy, and basically meeting you in triathlon was my sanity and my escape from like pretty challenging lifestyle at a military academy. So we go way back to then, and you helped me out so much as a cadet when you barely have access to anything and the funds to do anything, but you tend to love a sport that is outside of your means at that point. So you really helped me along the way, and I can't thank you enough for that. But right now I'm active duty Coast Guard, and I work in D.C. as a chemical engineer. So basically I review engineering plans of ships that come into U.S. waters, and I work more on the hazardous material side, chemical compatibility, and vapor control and environmental regulations. So that's my work right now. But how I got started into triathlon, I was actually a rower at the academy, and I was able to do a cadet exchange program at the Naval Academy, and they have a pretty good, actually one of the better collegiate triathlon teams. So I wanted to learn from the best, so I started triathlons there and was able to have a really great introduction from people with a lot of experience. And then I came back to the academy, and I think that's about the time I met you and was able to grow from there. And then from then on, even though it's been kind of challenging depending on where I've been stationed, I've pursued triathlons since then. So.
Pretty awesome. Now, when you were, of course, starting to get involved a little bit in triathlon, and you were, as you mentioned, rowing at the time, when was your first inclination that you could actually be pretty good as a triathlete? And also, I guess I have to ask about your swimming background. I mean, you know what mine is. It's non-existent. When did you start swimming as well? So a couple of questions there, but you know, that was such an important time period for you because, as you said, you had all of these academic and military academy demands placed on you, and the sport was sort of an outlet. But I know, watching from the outside looking in, that you were pretty good right from the get-go. When did you first think you could be pretty good in this sport?
I don't know. It's a hard thing to say. I just really enjoyed it right from the start because I felt like I wasn't that good at so many things related to, especially you were saying swimming. I was never a swimmer. I didn't have a swimming background. I kind of felt like Nemo, the gimpy fish in the water. And then I've just found the older you get and you try new things as an adult, I enjoy the things that I'm not as good at, and it's more satisfying having to work so much harder at them. And then when you do finally see yourself get better at them, it becomes something I can't turn away from. So when I was at the Naval Academy, it definitely was an awesome experience to learn from people. And when you don't know any better, you know, ignorance is bliss. And I saw these people training who had probably been training for years at that point, and this is my first semester doing it. I just did what they did. And doing that much training, probably not the smartest training, obviously not the smartest training since you know me, I got fit, and in my first race, I was able to do a small race in Lancaster. I guess that would be my first real race. I think I did a sprint triathlon maybe before I went to the Naval Academy because I didn't want to embarrass myself. But my first race, I actually won for the women. And at that point, I knew, like, there's still so much I could do to get better, and I was still pretty good at it. So that would probably be the thing that kept me going in the sport. Like, hey, if I can do this, and I don't know that much about the sport, imagine what I can do when I know a lot more about the sport. So it was hard to walk away from that, but it was pretty amazing to win a race. I don't think I'd ever really won anything like that before. So, and that was the Big Wick Triathlon in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So I still remember it. I think I still have the T-shirt.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. You know, in thinking back on those years, and because my memory doesn't work all that good, what year did you graduate from the Coast Guard Academy?
2006.
2006, right. So if we go back to... if I remember correctly, when I first met you and started learning a little bit about you, you definitely impressed me as a really good overall athlete, somebody who was strong and had a good amount of mobility and flexibility. I mean, you just seemed like a really good athlete. And I think somewhere along the way, I learned that I believe it's a little bit of a gymnastics background when you were a child. Is that correct?
Yes, that was my childhood obsession. I guess it's obvious now. I just get addicted to things. But, yeah, from the gymnastics from 3 until I think around 13 or 14. And that was competitive gymnastics, so it got to where you're like 9 and 10 years old and training 20-plus hours a week and competing on weekends. And I loved it until I didn't anymore in high school. I became a head case. So I went on to running from there. And when you know how to work really hard, but you never develop skills in any other sports like soccer or eye-hand coordination with ball sports, only thing to do is run. So that's what I did.
Hey, that's my life story right there. No talent
exactly.
Or skill in any other sport, so let's go run.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt like that gymnastics background was so important for you. Obviously, you brought tremendous work ethic to everything that you've done, and you sort of exude this joy and love of sport, and you know, much like someone I had on the podcast a few weeks ago, Larissa Danis, you know, below this feeling of joy and just loving the sport and just enjoying training and loving being fit is, you know, the underlying all of that is a work ethic. You know, you love to work hard, you commit to something, you have discipline. You call it, you know, being addicted, right? And there's an addiction element in everything that we do as human beings. I think everybody's aware of that. But I look at I look at it, and I certainly have looked at your development, and what I've seen is, you know, a tremendous amount of discipline and a willingness to work hard, and that's pretty cool. So it's funny when I remember folks asking me about how you were seeming to do so well early on in your development, and I always told them, I said, listen, just take a gymnast and teach him a little bit how to swim and give him a bike and let him go run, and everything else is kind of easy. Gymnastics just teaches you strength, and you're working on all of those skills. Naturally, it's hard in your body, too, but it's a pretty doggone good sport to have as a child to set a platform to move forward with, right?
I totally agree. I'm so thankful I did it. The base strength and the flexibility, I kind of lost sight of that for a while, because you can rest on those laurels for a long time when you do it for that long. And then finally when it was gone and I realized how immobile I'd gone and my strength was kind of gone, having worked on ships for so many years, I finally like have refocused to get back to there. And luckily, because I did it for so long, I can get back to it. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of don't want to know what kind of athlete I'd been if I hadn't have been a gymnast for so long. But yeah.
Right.
It helped me out tremendously. Sure.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So you went to collegiate nationals how many times? You went twice, right?
Yeah, I went twice.
How did those races go?
The first one, again, I was still, I feel like, my ignorance is bliss kind of moment, my first experience there, and it went really well. For me, I got third the first time I went. And, again, I don't even, it's kind of an all blur because it was such a new experience for me, but I remember just going out and the way the divisions were lined up, I had no idea who I was really racing. The only thing I really knew to do was just keep going hard even when it hurt, and then I ended up placing third my first time there. And then the second time, I was back at the Coast Guard Academy, and I definitely have to say my time at the Naval Academy, I had a lot more me time and sort of freedom and flexibility, being sort of the stranger in a new land, and then being back at my school as a senior graduating, there's still a few more constraints, so and a lot more competition. I feel like more people showed up, so I didn't do as well, but I still did pretty well. I think I may have gotten sixth my second time there, so but both experiences were great. It's a really awesome thing that they put on for that. You can go there as a newbie triathlete, not really knowing anything. It's your introduction to sport and to race some national level athletes who are probably going to go on to be professional triathletes, and just a really great venue for young triathletes and developmental triathletes. So I'm really thankful for that experience. But
yeah, very cool. You know, I want to take a second and first, you know, you reminded me listening to you. I just want to thank you for your service, Rachel. It's interesting how incredible the whole military triathlon world is, at least, and I can look back on it now as sort of being an outsider. But here, you know, you've got so many of these athletes who train so hard and work so hard, yet the demands and the rigors of being in the military, or in your case at that time, being at a military academy where you're not only having to meet all of these specific military standards, but tremendous academic standards. I mean, the Coast Guard Academy and all of the military academies are very, very high-level academic institutions with a very high standard. I'll never forget the day that you graduated, and you're such a happy-go-lucky person, and such have such an amazing personality. And I remember not really seeing the side of you that was the student in the way that I did when the day you graduated. And I realized you had finished very near the top of your class from an academic point of view. And I was taken aback a little bit, and it really was impressive. To me. And so, you know, when you look at how you developed as a triathlete and having to do it in the context of the military, where you're traveling, and for you, you've been on ships. I know you spent some time on an icebreaker. Talk a little bit about the challenges of the military life and training for the sport. And what I would love for you to share, if you can, is what are some of the things you learned about how to be more efficient with your time, how to fit training in? Because every single listener who's out there has the same challenges. They're just different, right? Trying to fit things in. If you have kids, you've got a family, you got a job. Training is hard. You know, training for Ironman is just ridiculously hard. What are some of the things you learned over the years? I mean, you've had some real challenges. You've been on a boat all over the doggone world.
Yeah, that's for sure. I feel like a personality or just being in a military environment, you're obviously, you seek this out because you like a challenge, and also you want to serve something greater than yourself. And I feel like that personality is something that it's going to reflect in every part of your lifestyle. So I almost feel like it was just kind of a natural development to want to seek out like a personal challenge, my professional challenges, and then have my personal side also be challenging too. They actually kind of work hand in hand. In order for them to work, in order to be disciplined professionally, I'm going to be disciplined with my triathlon. And if I wasn't in both of them, then neither of them would work out very well. So they kind of are like interwoven with one another. But overall, it's kind of fit. I wouldn't say I recommend doing what I do to everyone, because I'm definitely a morning person, and a lot of times I know my schedule in the afternoon gets kind of out of control. So even at the academy, I would get up early before formations, and I would go for runs or ride on my bike trainer down in the bike room. And then at lunchtime, if there were swimming pool hours were open, even if as a cadet I wasn't supposed to go to those, no one really yells at you if you're doing more than what you're supposed to be doing, as long as where you are, where you go, where you're supposed to be at the right time. So I do stuff like that. And obviously it's more challenging, but I think anyone who's done this, and then how you feel about yourself, and like that, I saw this fitness me like develop as an endurance athlete my time at the academy, from being a rower and a triathlete, and just feeling more fit actually helped academically, because I could get up early, study, and stay up kind of late because I was so healthy, more so than some of my classmates that didn't live as healthy a lifestyle. And then also eating well and fueling your body well. It's kind of amazing what the body can withstand. To a point, I definitely have gone overboard in my time and then have to take a step back and reevaluate what I'm doing. But then as far as working on ships, stuff I had to do, when you initially get to a ship, you're unqualified, and then in order to get qualified, you stand a lot of watches, which leaves very minimal time in between to get other work done, because when you're on a ship, my specific job was basically a ship driver, so navigating the ship, and also a diver or a dive officer, so I'd be in charge of a dive team, and then in addition, all my collaterals. So you don't have that much time in between, so if I was going to work out, it typically had to be around a time that wasn't in the workday, and that anyone in charge of me wouldn't really see me, because they often would perceive that as, if I had the time to be working out, then I obviously didn't have enough to do. So it was usually like before a watch when no one else was up, so at weird times, which has helped me a lot, because I have no problem getting up at really early hours of the morning to do training for Ironman, because I was so used to it from ship life. But yeah, I would get up early, or I would set my bike trainer up in weird places, like on a flying bridge where no one could see me, and I could spend hours there, or on weekends when people are sleeping in, say on a Sunday when we don't actually have to do anything, I would get up and ride my bike trainer for hours and hours in some little hole on a ship. So, I definitely had to say my time on a ship was not my best training, because it took me a long time to realize that lots of hours on a trainer didn't necessarily mean I was going to have the fitness when I got back to land, especially when I've sacrificed like sleep and eating well just to do it, and then trying to recalibrate depending on each patrol on what I really need to do, basically just to maintain enough fitness without causing any damage and without injuring myself and keeping my sanity, so that when I got back to port, I was a like healthy functioning athlete. So I can't say I figured out. Basically, every time I got underway, I had to figure out something new, but that was kind of the fun of it. I like puzzles, and I like trying to figure things out. so frustrating at times, but really rewarding when I actually got it to work and could come back into port and then go run a trail run and win it. So that's pretty rewarding, but it didn't work every time. There's lots of failures in there. So
yeah, you know, it's so funny to you know, I'm just chuckling at myself listening to you talk. Lots of failures in there for sure, Rach, but a lot of successes as well that really came from, you know, your willingness to just try anything to continue to train. And, you know, I have to say, I mean, I know there's some folks that are listening who at some level are thinking, you know, the sport, training at a high level in the sport just doesn't fit in my life because I can't carve a convenient time to train the way that I think that I should. And one of the things I know I've learned as a coach and certainly as an athlete before that time is if you really want something bad enough, you'll find the time and the way to do it. And, you know, boy, your development as an athlete really speaks to that exact thing. I remember the one period of time when you were on the icebreaker and you had the compu trainer and we set up for you to work with the RacerMate folks and you actually maintain a blog. And if our listeners could imagine, you know, you being on this icebreaker and literally having your compu trainer set up in a hole that was probably no bigger than a closet. It was probably 120 degrees. It was probably adjacent to a diesel engine. And there you are knocking out bike workouts. And that really goes directly back to your desire to continue to be the best that you can be. And I think every single listener out there, you know, that they should really, you know, hear that and take that to heart. And obviously there are many folks that are listening that they themselves live it with that same kind of an approach, you know, doing what it takes. But many are waiting for the most convenient time to train at a little bit higher level or find out what your potential is. And sometimes that opportunity never comes if you're looking for it to be convenient, that's for sure. I can remember in my early days as a triathlete, one year I was doing Ironman California, and that race was pretty early on in the spring. And so I had to train through the wintertime. It meant those long trainer sessions, and I had kids. So if they had something going on and they want to miss hooking up with them and being at their activities, I need to be on the trainer, you know, very, very early in the morning, sometimes 3 a.m. I mean, it sounds crazy, but you do what you got to do. And that really represents, I mean, that's a lot about how you've developed, is just staying in the game, especially through those more challenging times.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you said, and you said some things that just ring so true to me, but it doesn't seem crazy anymore to me, you know, because when you love it so much, and I look forward to those 3 a.m. trainings, I like eagerly. It might sound strange to someone else, but like every place I've gone has required something different on how to fit it into my schedule, but every time you make it work, you find something new and you find joy in it. Because I live in D.C. right now, one of the only times to get in good bike workouts on some of the good hills around where I live is to ride like 2:30 to 3 a.m. when there's no cars on the road and it's kind of this eerie orange light that's there, but it's so peaceful and you never find peace in a city. So it's very unique and I love going out for those rides and I look forward to when I have to do bike intervals on an early morning and I have to get up at 2:30 to go do them. And other people might not understand, but I think once you experience it, it makes complete sense. Like you understand why I want to get up that early and be out there, just me and the road and the sweat.
So that's what anyone who wants to beat you in an Ironman race is going to have to face, is they're going to have to get up at 3 and go ride your bike. Talk a little bit about Ironman Coeur d'Alene and your training going into that. And, you know, I will say, you know, for our listeners' benefit that, you know, Ironman is certainly obviously a very challenging distance to train for and race. And your Ironman success certainly didn't happen overnight. I mean, but for you to go out and win your age group in this race is a dramatic victory for you, and it really is it really expresses how everything came together for you on the day, and that doesn't mean you didn't suffer and didn't go really, really deep to make that win happen. But talk a little bit about your training going into Coeur d'Alene. What are some of the things that you did? What were some of your key training sessions that you felt were really important? And then maybe get into race day a little bit and talk about how that went down for you.
Okay. So I definitely think over the last couple of years, since I've been stationed in D.C., this has probably been the most consistent schedule I've ever had as far as work is concerned. And I know when you coached me in the past, you're more than aware of sort of my inability to follow a structured plan, and I tend to make workouts longer because I just wanted to that day or go for a trail run. So honestly, these last 2 years, I've really tried to refocus on doing all the stuff that maybe isn't the long training but is more important overall that you tried to instill in me when I was much younger but too young and dumb to listen. So I've focused a lot on mobility and rebuilding strength and just being a healthy athlete so that my body could withstand the volume of training now that I actually had the time to do it. So I think the main keys to my success over the last couple of years that has helped me actually get faster, I don't think I've gotten faster since college until these last couple of years, has been doing yoga consistently, doing a lot of hip exercises and strength exercises and single leg and working on my imbalances, and also actually going to the doctor when I have pains because I have some mechanical, my really flat feet that just cause a lot of other issues as far as running too much, paying attention to those and making sure that they don't develop into injuries so that I can do long runs. And because I don't think, except for this last year, I'd ever really run longer than 2 hours before an Ironman because I was just in too much pain. So actually I can do that again. So it's been really great. So as far as the training, it definitely has been paying attention to those little details that aren't really that little that make a huge difference, and also really good nutrition, ensuring I'm fueling my body correctly. As a vegetarian, there's definitely things I'm missing, so I have to pay a lot of attention and put more effort in, but I have the time to do that now. So I think that's been the key to my training. And then as far as race day, going into it, I typically have a lot of GI problems racing. So like 3 days before, I pretty much cut out anything high in fiber, which helped a lot. I didn't have half as many as I usually do racing. It was a lot more comfortable to race. So I still had some issues as far as the run is concerned. But basically trying to stick to my nutrition plan, which I'm notorious for, like throwing out the window the moment the race starts and doing whatever feels right, which is good because I can adapt, and bad when you really need to pay attention to it. I think it was a pretty rough day, and it didn't go as I had planned. It was a very kind of cold, choppy swim, a bit slower than I had anticipated. And then the bike ride, I kind of just felt miserable the whole time until about mile 85. I just kind of felt like cyclical bonking or sugar drops, but I think it speaks just so significantly of how good my training had been to that I could withstand this awful feeling my entire bike ride and still come out and keep pushing it all the way through the run, because I knew I was really close to the other women in my age group, and I wasn't sure how many spots there would be for Kona, and I really wanted to qualify for Kona. That, throughout not having a great race and not feeling like I know I could feel that I could push through it all. I still hope to fix that for Kona because I know I could race much faster. But that's pretty much how the entire day went. I just never kind of felt on my game, but kind of suffered through it and pushed through it. And I still have the fitness because my training has been so good these last couple of years, and I am I feel like pretty injury free, which has helped a lot, and I have so much mobility. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you know, it's interesting to hear you talk about your race and how much you did, you know, you struggled, at least, you know, not feeling good like you had hoped. And this is, I think it's a really, you know, you said it a couple of times, your fitness level and your preparation going into the race was really so good that you could sustain even not feeling that well and still maintain a quality pace. And that really does speak to consistency in your training and you having done all of those things that we all know are so important that every listener has heard Kurt and I talk about endlessly for, you know, folks that have come through our gait lab and we look at imbalances and try to address the mobility and something that, you know, we tend to lose a little bit as we age, certainly even for those of us that are fairly mobile or highly mobile. And it's crazy to think that you could feel so badly and still maintain that speed, but ultimately, you know, you were fit and you were, as you say, strong and healthier than ever, which is so, so important. It was a windy day out there too, so that resulted in a little bit of the chop for sure on the lake, I know, and challenging on the bike as well. And I think you nabbed somewhere in the neighborhood of a 545 to 550 bike split, if I remember correctly, which is around, you know, 19 miles an hour. So that's a tremendous effort for you. And you're not racing with power, right?
No, I don't have any power. Especially because I usually rent race wheels out there, so I'm not really sure what my power is right now. In the winter, I train with it on a compu trainer, but as far as outdoor training, I don't really use power.
You have a really good inner clock, I know that, and proof of that is your ability to run 3:30 or so off the bike, which is a tremendous run, especially given how you were feeling. You know, what are some of the thoughts that are going through your head when you're racing and when you're not feeling great? And it's obvious to anyone who's listening, you know, especially folks that have been in that situation, that, you know, you're fighting this sort of inner battle. You know, one half of your brain's just saying bag the day and forget it and just spin your legs, or maybe today's your first DNF in an Ironman, whatever, right? But you didn't do that. You hung tough. What are some of the thoughts that are going through your head, and how you dealing with that mentally?
You know, I think experience definitely has helped me a lot as far as those days are concerned, because I've had so many bike rides where you start out and your legs just feel like trash, or you feel really weak to start, and then an hour and a half later, suddenly the rest of your workout ends up being the best workout of your life. So knowing that in these really long endurance events, like, it can change in a minute helps me a lot. And having done so many races, I know that those really, really bad feelings, as long as I keep focusing and trying to get more fuel in and put more water in, it can change. It can change in the blink of an eye. So I never really get too concerned, especially knowing all the training I've been doing, and I felt like it was really quality training, and I wasn't overtrained. I had a lot of confidence in my fitness. So confidence and experience definitely help me out all the time now, and I don't get too worried. And you know, you can kind of tell when it's just not your best day out there and when maybe you're legitimately sick, because we're so in tune with our bodies at this point, because we push them so hard. When anything little is off, we can kind of tell. So that's what really helps me out there. So when I have those really bad moments, I honestly just try to refocus and do the best I can at that moment, think about pedaling well, using good technique and anything I can to be more efficient, since my legs don't seem to want to pedal, and get the right food in and the right water and fix all the things I can fix and not worry about what I can't. And eventually, you know, 3 minutes down the road, I'll suddenly have like a moment of glory where I feel fantastic. Or, you know, finally by mile 85, I'm like, oh, I know how to ride again. And I felt really strong. And I caught back up to the two women that had passed me, you know, at mile 30. And just keep carrying on from there and hoping that the race is turning around at that point. And it always is a roller coaster. But I think that's the part that's great about this sport. It's so long and it changes so frequently. You never know what you're going to get around the next turn. And while sometimes what you get around the next turn is a nightmare, sometimes it's a really happy ending. So just looking forward to whatever's next. So.
Yeah, it's not over until it's over, that's for sure. Huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. When did you know you won your age group?
I was pretty...
You have some cheerleaders on the course?
I did. I had some awesome people. There was a woman who I met in Hawaii, and I actually trained for my first Ironman with her, and it was probably the most fun I've ever had training. I was on a buoy tender out of there, so I was underway all the time, and my training was really infrequent, and I'd come back into port, and she would drag me around the island on bike rides, and I would feel miserable, and I'd be laughing my ass off because she's hilarious, and it was such a great time training with her. So she came out and was pedaling up and down the run course the entire time and was yelling stuff at me and told me there was one other woman in front of me and she wasn't in my age group. And then I knew there was a woman pretty close behind me who was in my age group, but I was running really, really well at first and then sort of crashed and fell apart in the center of that race. And she ended up probably close to 30 seconds by me at the last turnaround with 6 miles to go. And that's when I decided, I was like, nope, this, she's not going to catch me. It's not going to happen. I'm going for this no matter what. And opened up like a more significant gap to the end, which still wasn't that great considering all the how long the race is. I think it was maybe a little over 2 minutes between the two of us by the end. But at 6 miles to go, I knew where I was, and that's where I wanted to stay. So.
Awesome. What a feeling, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So what's coming up for you now, Rach? Obviously, Kona in October, between now and then, and actually that's going to come up sooner than we know it. What other plans do you have from a racing point of view? And yeah, it's funny, you're in Vegas right now too, right? Are you training there?
Yep.
Or is this a...
I am doing some training. I'm actually just out visiting my sister, but I'm definitely training. I've got a bike out here and went to Master Swim this morning with some... Vegans. That was fun. But as far as what I have next is I'm going to do a half in August in Penyon, New York, so around the Finger Lakes. And I did the full distance last year, but because I'm doing Kona this year or because I've already done an Ironman this year, I don't want to do too many. So I'm going to do half distance in August 16th around then, I believe. And then I'll probably do an Olympic distance race in September. And I'll train with that, but just to get some speed work in, and then just Ironman in October, and that's basically it. All the rest is training.
Right, and then after Ironman, mountain bike time.
I know, I miss it so much.
Yeah, I hear you. I was, I just finished putting together some plans for a mountain bike camp that I'm going to host here at the end of October. Actually, I'm trying to think. It's actually not the end of October. No, it is. I think it's the weekend after Halloween. I actually have to check, and I'm sitting here, and we're on the podcast, and I'm not even sure what the dates are of this. But if you're anywhere in or around Connecticut, we'll have you come, and you can be a celebrity guest, and then I'll make you a camp counselor for the weekend.
And, okay, I'll definitely check my schedule.
You can demonstrate your wheelies and your bunny hops. And
oh, yeah. My falling off the back of the mountain bike and...
Right. That's awesome. So before we sign off, do you have any... What are your thoughts, any recommendations, tips for our listeners? What are one or two things that you really feel have made the biggest differences for you? What do you love most about the sport? You know, that kind of thing. What? Any thoughts there?
That's
already,
a hard one, but
you've certainly shared, you know, your desire at your now advanced age of 30 something to really take care of your body. That's so important, and you know, train to the benefit of it, not to the detriment of it. And so that's an important one for sure. You know, I know for me, listening to you talk, I mean, you figure out a way to keep this sport fun and an adventure. It's always an adventure for Rachel. I love that. And that is so important, right? Because the minute training becomes kind of, you know, mechanical or mechanistic, or, you know, it's a drag. It's got to enhance your life. It's got to add to your life. It's got to be fun. Even though you have to work hard, right? You got to do things you don't always want to do. Keeping it fun is so cliche, but it's so important, right?
Yeah. I guess I can think of a couple things. One is, like, don't be afraid to try new things. Not necessarily, like you were saying, it can become repetitive and mundane if you're just following the plan. But you can follow a really regimented plan and make it different. Like when I'm getting tired of certain training, or I've been doing the same thing and I'm dreading going to it, for me, I've been doing the same swim workouts, or I think that's probably the most boring, is going to the same pool. I find a new pool, I find something interesting to do. I go for an open water swim, or when I have a workout that involves like certain intervals and I usually do it in the same place, I'll look up riding in a new place, and it's really exciting to try new things and have new experiences. But I think sometimes people are like overly concerned with getting just those numbers in instead of the overall experience with it. And to me, it just, it kind of opens my mind. It opens up everything to mix it up all the time. And I still get the great workout in. Sometimes it's not perfect. Sometimes it doesn't work out as I had planned, but you can always make it work. And then also, I think that's what's helped me a lot is, I think in the past I've done things because not necessarily I've done it to myself, but put other people's expectations on me, and just not caring, not necessarily not caring about what they think, but they really, everyone else just wants the best for you too. And I think sometimes when, if you like, you have a coach, or you feel like people might be disappointed in you, how you're doing it, but, or being overly concerned with other people you're racing. When I go to races and I just see people get so stressed out and worked up about the race the next day, I kind of don't get that anymore, because the only one that really matters is yourself. And I know that I'm going to go out there and I'm going to race my hardest, and whatever day I get is what I get. And I know I'm going to push myself, so I don't really care what other people think or how anyone else races, and they're no concern of mine. So that's helped me a lot and reduced the stress. I don't really get too stressed out about races anymore, and made me a lot faster and a lot better and much happier. So I think that perspective, taking time to develop, and I'm not perfect at it, I still will like look over and see someone swim by me at ungodly speeds and think to myself, man, I must be going slow, and then I just have to ignore it and focus on swimming well. But yeah, it's just about you, you know? And as long as I just concern myself with myself, I have a much better time. So,
you know, that may be the most valuable tip you've shared through our entire call, because, you know, I can tell you as a coach and as a father, those expectations, you know, that we perceive, and the pressure that we put on ourselves, just sucks so much joy out of so many experiences. And I'm so happy to hear that you've reached that space where you can really go out there and enjoy it fully. And that's just great advice, Rach. Really, really good stuff. Well, thanks so much for joining us, joining me on this podcast call. It's been great having you, great spending a little time with you. I know our listeners have really benefited a lot from some of the things that you've shared. I highly recommend anybody that can connect with you to do it. You're an amazing person and an amazing triathlete. And we all here at Pursuit Athletic Performance wish you the best of success with your preparation going into the half in August, and Kona, of course. We'll be watching and hoping for the best for you. And so thanks for joining me.
No, thank you for having me. This has been really fun.
Cool beans. All right, everybody, have a great day out there. Have a great weekend. If you're racing, have fun. If you're training, and we know you are, be safe. Be careful out there on the roads. And signing off here from sunny Old Saybrook. Rach, thanks again. Have fun out there in Vegas, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete in you.